This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley.
Slavery is not a relic to be buried, but a wound that has not been allowed to heal. You cannot heal what you do not treat. You cannot treat what you do not see as a problem. And America continues to look the other way, to ask African Americans to turn the other cheek, to suppress our joy, to downplay our achievements, to accept that we are supposed to go only as far as we are allowed.
That is Rachelle Riley, reading from her opening essay in her new book, Burden: African Americans and the Enduring Impact of Slavery. We are joined today by Rachelle Riley, an award-winning columnist for the Detroit Free Press, who will be in Cincinnati to speak Thursday night at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. We are also joined by Manager of Program Initiatives at the Freedom Center, Chris Miller. If you'd like to join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Rachelle Riley, welcome. Chris Miller, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, Rachelle, you write that the descendants of American slaves have spent 150 years, quote, seeking permission to put their burden down. What's the burden?
Well, there's actually more than one burden, but the biggest burden is carrying that level of rejection and that sense of second-class citizenship that has marked African-American life ever since the Emancipation Proclamation, which was a piece of paper but didn't really do what it was supposed to do.
So you say that slavery evolved and hundreds of years later remains ingrained in the way we live. And in what – where, when you look at our society today, and, you know, one way to respond to this is, gee, it's obvious, but spell it out. Where do you see the ingrained – ongoing relationship of slavery to the present-day society?
Well, let's think about it. Slavery didn't end. It just changed addresses from plantations to courtrooms, classrooms, and newsrooms. We have spent, as African Americans in this country, years seeking permission to be a part of this society, permission to work in jobs, and discrimination burdens it, permission to drink from public water fountains, permission to dine at public lunch counters, permission to sit anywhere on buses that tax dollars pay for. Now, these days, permission to literally live without being harassed, stopped, mistreated, or continued to be viewed as second-class citizens. And as long as that's happening, we're carrying America's burden. We are what America has that reminds America of what it once did. And everyone wants to disappear it, move away from it. People say, oh, don't talk about slavery. But we never did anything about slavery. We never had the conversation about slavery. And until we do, it's not going to go away, and neither is the racism that's allowed by it.
Chris Miller, at the Freedom Center, one of the goals, one of the tasks, is to help people have a conversation about the enduring impact of slavery in our society. Been open for 14 years. You've got some experience at this point. How do you see this in terms of the ability of people to actually come together and have a conversation?
I believe the essential part about having that conversation is having a great understanding about slavery. I believe that some people feel that, well, was it really that harsh? Was it really that bad? You know, and I think there's this misunderstanding about how life was for those who were enslaved and how that rolled over into generation after generation. Every achievement that this country has made, there's been a price that has been paid and is usually paid by those who have been marginalized and disenfranchised. Much of the progress was not given. It was fought for by a diversity of people, but it was fought for. It was not given. The country did not just abolish slavery because they just thought it was bad. There was a war that was fought to bring about an end of slavery. But then after that, you also had the pipeline, the prison, the high incarceration rates, which we still have today in the country. And you have the 13th Amendment that outlawed slavery except as a form of punishment for a crime you've been duly convicted. So we're still dealing with that legacy.
So seeing that clause in the 13th Amendment as opening up sort of the modern form of very high levels of incarceration, and as segregation was made illegal, if not in practice still there, but moving to incarceration is a third form of this.
Absolutely. It's a part of the economic fabric of our country. And so we have to have a real conversation, but we also have to make sure that from an educational standpoint that we are educating not only our young people but our adults about actually what slavery, the purpose that it served, who benefited from it, how did it harm, and what were the social dynamics, not just dates and names, but understanding the social dynamics of slavery.
Rochelle, in your introductory essay, and you're the editor of The Burden, you have, 23 other writers who have joined you in this, but you write about lowered expectations, and only people can only rise to the point that is permitted. But those two things, I think, really are, this is not just sort of hard and fast things. It's attitudinal, built into society's attitudes and not just individual attitudes. I found that sentence very interesting.
Well, I think what people forget is you don't have to have a written law to marginalize people, to make people less than. There are ways to diminish people in all kinds of ways. One of the most important is education, and I'm glad that Chris just mentioned that. Imagine that you spend hundreds of years not learning anything about the greatness of your people, about the achievements and inventions and ways that they contributed to America, and that's how you see yourself, just as the children of slaves. And in the meantime, you're in classrooms and in settings with children who have been raised to believe that they are the elite of society, that they are the people who founded America, that they are the people who helped guide America and helped continue to keep America great. I think that as long as we continue to not teach all of American history, we have one America, one history, but we have taught a segregated history for centuries, and that has affected our children. In addition to that, one of the essays, Aisha Hines, a brilliant actress, who starred as Harriet Tubman in the television show Underground, she wanted to contribute, and she said, "I'm not sure what I want to say." And I said, "Well, what are you thinking?" And she said, "Well, I'm thinking, how do you have a Harvard-educated, brilliant constitutional lawyer who becomes a senator and then runs for president and wins, and people are surprised by that just because of the color of his skin?" I said, "There's your essay." So I think the lowered expectations and the continued effort to make black children who become black adults believe that they are less than affects what you think you can do.
You know, one of the interesting things, though, as long as we're talking about education, I started out 50 years ago as a teacher. You know, people, there's an instinct about saying, we're going to solve these issues by educating the next generation, and they're going to deal with this. What's your reaction to that, Rochelle?
Well, as my grandmother used to say, we'll keep doing stuff until Sadie Jones' goat died. but that won't change anything, because it's just like here in Detroit, where 90% of the third graders in our city schools don't read at grade level. And we've been saying that for 10 years. They become the fourth, fifth, and sixth graders and the graduates who contribute to one-third of our population being unemployed. You can't keep trying to do the same thing over and over. I mean, Einstein taught us that. So we're not really doing anything. We're not really making any progress if we attack the problem the same way. I think until we realize that we are perpetuating the problem by not doing something about it, only then can we do something. The conversations that I've had with this book, and they've been in settings attended by black and white audiences alike, have been eye-opening. From people who literally did not know, and I believe them, how bad slavery was, to people who did not care before but do now.
So what is your role as a journalist, a columnist, an African American. What is your role? And I would also just ask a parallel question. What's the role of white journalist, white columnist? Rochelle?
It is as it has always been, and it's to tell the truth, to seek the truth, to talk about what isn't talked about, to shine a light. This is a problem that black journalists have been writing about since W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington used to debate how to make things better. This is a problem that is America's problem, and it's the one problem that we keep trying to solve without solving the problem. We try to put this on the burden of our children by desegregating schools, which are now as segregated now as they were before the 54 Brown versus Board decision. Then we try to do it in the courts, but you can't make people change their hearts. All you can do is make some things publicly intolerable. I wrote in a column, you can't be a public racist if you're a public servant. Some things can't be allowed, and they have to be talked about. So my job as a journalist, any journalist's job, is to tell the truth, then duck.
Then duck. Okay.
One of the best journalists ever. Les Payne said that because he always did, and he did not shy away from saying what needed to be said. And because this is the kind of thing that, you know, you don't really want to talk about, people really don't want to get into it, well, I plan to talk about it loudly and persistently, at least for the next year.
Well, Chris, what is the, you know, I was just asking Rochelle about her role, which is as a journalist, a columnist. What's the role of cultural institutions? What's the role of the Freedom Center, the new lynching memorial in Birmingham, the Charles Wright Museum in Detroit, you know, all of these different institutions out there? What's your role?
Our role is to adhere to and advance our mission, which is to reveal the stories of freedom heroes from the Underground Railroad to contemporary times, to challenge and inspire everyone to take courageous steps for freedom today. So our role is to reveal these stories. Some of them are historical. Some of them are based out of history. Rochelle's book. This book is dynamic. After I read the foreword by Nicole Hannah-Jones, I said, wow. I mean, I think that was like the first, what, three or four pages or whatever the case might be. And from my position, my role at the Freedom Center, I definitely wanted to make a way to bring this conversation to our institution. It is something that we continue to do on a regular basis, to have these uncomfortable, complicated conversations so that we can have a greater understanding and hopefully have some type of progress. But it's the understanding that progress tends to work not very quickly. We do understand that. But we must guard our hope and continue to do the work. And I think this book speaks to that, of working through that process, dealing with the legacy of slavery, that not only that African-Americans deal with, but also all Americans deal with if you live in this country, because it transcends into so many different aspects of our society.
Do you get the right people to come to those discussions, or do you just attract people who are already on the same page?
A very good question. The majority come to be enlightened, but they're already probably halfway there. You will have some people. And then you have some people who probably, well, let's just see what's going on. You know, Cincinnati is a very special place. It's been my home for nearly 20 years. And it is somewhat segregated in many different ways, not just by race, but also just sections and areas, town where you live at. And so we just try to present opportunities, compelling people like Rochelle Riley, for people to come out of their respective neighborhoods, to come down to the banks and just hear participate in a wonderful conversation about moving our society forward.
Rochelle, what role, if any, does the question of reparations play in your wanting to raise these questions?
Well, Ta-Nehisi Coates did that very well, and I don't use the word reparations because what I'm doing is talking about a repairing. I'm talking about, again, that conversation that we have not had in 400 years about what happened, what it does to our country, what it has done to a lot of the people in our country, and how we can reconcile with each other, because we can't move on to do other things and have discussions about anything else until we do that. This is about the great repairing. This is about having that moment where we're actually looking at each other and acknowledging, oh my God, this really did happen. You cannot have people dismiss it like they try to do the Holocaust. You cannot continue to have people disparage Black people and say, well, what's wrong with your families and what's wrong with your life and what's wrong? When this country ruined so many Black lives, literally tore children from their mothers' arms and tore families apart and sold them to different plantations and set about, you know, a horrible tradition that African Americans have been escaping from and trying to overcome for so long, and continuing those things that would keep them from overcoming through law, through tradition, through culture. This is not something that somebody said, okay, let's open up the great gates of the plantation and you're all free, go be fruitful and prosper, when you had nothing. The 40 acres and a mule that Lincoln promised, Andrew Johnson said, no, you can't have it. Imagine starting out with nothing and then see where many African Americans have come, but those that haven't, we can't pretend like this isn't that history.
You know, yesterday, the guest on this show was David Blight of Yale University, who has been a consultant to the Freedom Center since 1996 or so. And we were talking about the whole controversy around Confederate memorials. And I raised the question with David about whether or not the United States still has time and could benefit from a formal, whether it's a truth and reconciliation process, as in the South African model, or there's other variations on that. And his point was every country has to figure out what fits that society. Would you like to see something like that, something really formal, something national, something sanctioned? Because as much as your book can do, it can only go so far.
Well, I think about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was used in South Africa to have a public reckoning of what happened and how people were able to move on a little bit because of that. I don't have a specific suggestion because it should come from the people who are having the conversation. It should come from people who know that they should be a part of the conversation. But even something like that that gets us started down a road of repairing would be great. I think that until we do something or stop doing nothing, nothing's going to change. And at this time in our country, when hate is rising and people are being empowered to be hateful and to be separatist and to be what, you know, once was, it's a perfect time for anybody who thinks that's wrong to start having the conversation about how we not ever let that happen again.
Well, that certainly raises the contemporary environment we're in right now and what's possible and what's not in Donald Trump's America. And so you're saying that because of sort of the extreme situations, maybe it's a good time to do this. I think you're saying there's always a good time to do this, but do you think that this is sort of going to have to be a grassroots? I don't think it's going to get sanctioned from the top down.
I think we will look back, and this will sound very ludicrous, but we will look back and thank Donald Trump for unmasking the hate, for making people stand up to take sides, and for deciding who we are going to be as America. This is a country of immigrants. His grandparents came here from another country, and through the capital and wealth that they had because of their state, you know, they had a different life than other people who came here, either in the bottom of boats or, you know, as the Irish did, treated, you know, quite frankly, like just a step above slaves. I think that, quite frankly, this is the conversation that he started inadvertently. So while he's doing the Donald Trump show over here, the rest of us can look at what he has wrought and figure out how we can make sure that America doesn't get ruined by what is happening. And a part of that is making sure that we don't let hate rise to the level that we can't have the conversation that we have been so close to for so long.
Well, we don't have much time left, but, you know, you've raised the question of people who have come here sort of after the slavery period, the immigrants from Southern and Eastern Europe, people who are coming as immigrants today. What's their role in all of this, Rochelle?
Well, quite frankly, we could be, and I know this sounds, you know, just a little conspiracist, but we could be just a generation removed from attempts to do that again. I mean, look at how immigrants are being treated. Look at how our country is now treating people that we used to say, come, be our, you know, folks yearning to be free. Your huddled masses are welcome here. We're not doing that anymore. And people, some people, are happy about it. We have to take a stand and say, this is the America we want, or we're going to live in the America somebody else wants. And I think that what he has done is created a perfect storm of circumstances to finally fix a longstanding problem.
Well, I want to thank Rochelle Riley and Chris Miller for being with us today. Rochelle will be a speaker tomorrow night and a discussion leader at the Freedom Center on Thursday evening. The doors open at 6. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The Selena Reeder is our assistant producer. Layla Shakui is our intern. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available at WVXU.org. I'm Dan Hurley. Stay tuned on 91.7 for Here and Now, coming up next.